Welcome to Manners and Madness, a Jane Austen and David Lynch podcast. My name is Maya Adkins.
And I'm Christian Cabrera. And today we are doing our part two of our dive into Lost Highway.
Yes, into the second half, the other side, the doppelganger of the first episode. Right.
Some new characters that we have not met before. Some that we have, but, you know, have different names.
Yes. Where will we land at the end of this?
In Crazy Town.
Well, I'm very excited to talk more about it.
Me too.
What should we talk about before we start, or should we just start?
I say we just get into it because I'm sure we'll have like favorite scenes and kind of our closing argument. Not yeah. arguments,
but our closing arguments.
Our debate.
All right, perfect. Okay. Well, let's just get into the recap then.
Let's do it.
Okay. The last thing that happened was the big like car chase with Mr. Eddy and like leaving the guy crying on the side of the road.
Yes.
And offering Pete a porno that he did not accept.
That I probably would also not have not accepted.
Yes, smart. Okay, so Pete is looking at himself in the mirror, which is very Fred. He like kind of definitely feels very Fred when he at this point. Yes. His injury is gone. He picks up his girlfriend and the cops are still tailing him. And he and his girlfriend kind of pull over to the side of the road for some hanky-panky. And I was like, okay, you're kind of right on the side of the road, but whatever.
I guess when you're young and attractive, you could just do whatever you want.
Yeah, the cops are jealous. It's our second sex scene, and it's definitely more passionate than the first.
Yes, I would say so.
Okay, so then we go back to the auto shop and Fred's saxophone music is playing on the radio.
Ooh, spooky.
And Pete is very irritated by it, so he changes it. And Jack Nance got his big moment there where he was like, why'd you change that? I liked it.
Hey. I'm always so happy to see him.
I know. He's like one of my favorites. Always.
Always.
Yeah, but Pete kind of seems like the music physically affected him.
Yes. He definitely has a connection to it, but it's a very negative connection.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so then Mr. Eddy arrives again, and he's got Alice with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete stares at her. And this she's magic moment plays.
She's getting out of the car, except this time she's got like the most platinum bleach blonde hair possible.
Yes. Did we even say she had brown hair in the first half?
No, but I think, you know, this is like kind of when it becomes important, like, oh, she's a different person now with different hair.
Yeah.
But sort of the same person.
Yeah, we don't really get to know her in this moment, but later that night, Alice comes back to the garage in a cab, and she asks Pete to take her to dinner. She's very much trying to seduce him, or like being very seductive with him.
Yes.
He is understandably very nervous considering who he saw her with.
Yeah.
She is definitely a different person because she is not in any way acting like Renee. She's not quiet or meek or, you know, sitting as far away as possible or unpassionate. She's just like.
Yeah, it's almost like a reversal of roles, like between her and like Renee and Fred and then now Alice, right? Is that her name?
Yeah.
Alice and Peter. Pete?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is wrong with the names?
Peter.
Today?
Peter is right. Pete.
Technically, Peter is right. But it's kind of like a reversal. Like with Fred, she was definitely like you said, more meek. She was kind of like the quote unquote prey. But now when she's with Pete, she's kind of like more of the predator. She's like on the prowl. Like she's quote unquote hunting him.
Yes, definitely. So they go to a motel room and the cops are still watching.
Of course.
And making jabs. There's a lot of passion between these two as well.
Yes. Instant connection.
So it's kind of I don't know if that's a montage, but it's just like we see that they have been continuing this tryst in different hotel mm-hmm. rooms for a while until one night she comes, I guess she went out with Mr. Eddie, and she comes back and she's afraid that he suspects something.
Yes, which I would be too.
Yeah. But it's almost like she wants him to, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
For the first moment she met Pete, she was like, yes, I'm going to get my claws on this young boy.
Yeah.
Because she definitely seems older.
Yeah, she's a little bit older than him. And you get that through, like, she feels more experienced with life. Like, she's gone through some stuff, whether good or bad, you know. But it definitely feels like she's, there is, like, some sort of excitement to her, maybe that she's being caught on. And I don't know what that is. Like, at first I was like, is she, like, does she like the idea of all this drama, like, being about her? Or mm-hmm. is she wanting more attention from Mr. Ed? I don't know.
Well,
Mr. Eddie, whatever the fuck.
From what we know at this point, it seems like perhaps she's trying to escape a situation that she's unhappy in, at least, because we know that Mr. Eddie is not cool generally.
No, he's a bad person.
But yeah, there's definitely more to be revealed, so we won't get too deep into that at the moment. So okay, oh, so we see Pete sitting in his room. Okay, we get kind of a weird imagery because I just wrote, like, spinning, weeping, her face, blurriness, spider, moths, and a lamp. He seems to be freaking out, and Nine Inch Nails is playing. So it seems like he's having all these weird imagery, like he's kind of having a meltdown of sorts. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit of a break from reality.
Yeah. And we see him riding on his motorcycle, and I was like, has he always had a motorcycle? We haven't seen a motorcycle, have we?
Well, he works in an auto shop. He reminds me of, oh gosh, hold on. What's his name? From Twin Peaks.
James?
James. I was like, not Bobby, the other one. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. He's. Because he's also kind of weirdly charismaless, like James is.
Yeah.
Not as bad, but.
Yeah. He's not someone who sticks out. He kind of is, like, you know, no, like a background character. Like, he's just, you know, nothing quote unquote special.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, he picks up his real girlfriend, I guess. That's what she is. Takes her to a motel and angrily has sex with her.
Ay, ay, ay.
I know. Back at home, his parents want to have a talk.
His father, Gary Busey.
Yes. This is his only lines in this scene.
Yes.
And it's questionable as to whether this scene is even happening based on the end of it.
Right. But
the police want to know if Pete remembers anything from why he ended up in jail. And then I wrote down, Sheila is his girlfriend's name. So I guess they finally really made me know what it
mentioned
was.
Mentioned her.
Yeah. The parents remember Pete coming home that night with Sheila, and there was a man with them. Because I think in the original scene where they switch places, we see that strange man, the mysterious man.
Ah.
I think. Yeah, I think so. The man is a mystery.
He sure is.
I don't know why I wrote this. It sounds like a weird way to say that. Maybe that was a line or something. But his parents get upset when he asks them what happened to him, and they won't tell him what happened to him. But we kind of see, like, in a flash, the same scene as before with Sheila standing on the lawn yelling his name and his parents mm-hmm. in the doorway. And there's kind of like a bright white light illuminating the scene. And then we see what kind of looks like a giant gaping hole / wound. Like, mm-hmm. it's hard to tell what it is because it's just a close up, but it kind of looks like an open wound, but it's not bloody or anything. But, and we get a shot of dead Renee.
Yes. Very scary.
Yeah. And then when Pete comes out of this, like, vision, his parents are gone.
Yeah.
So I was like, is this even really happening? Or, you know,
it's hard to
if
tell.
Your son was kind of like went into a weird fugue state, you wouldn't just leave him there, like leave the house.
Yeah. So maybe it's like it could be maybe a flashback of some sort, of right after it happened.
It's true. It could just be like a weird, you know, surrealist type thing. But it kind of feels like, well, is any of it real?
That's true.
But yeah, that's going to be at the end. But I, you know, these are the types of things that are leading me to my whatever conclusion I will have. But like the first part felt kind of unreal. This part feels kind of unreal, but definitely the parents don't seem like real parents because they're so weird and they just kind of disappear and they never speak. So except for this one scene.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if that's speaking to like, are they just not very involved parents? And it's like, might as well not even them be there because they never were.
Maybe, maybe. Plus, we know this is a movie about how we remember things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Interesting. Interesting.
Interesting. Okay, so we're back at the shop. Mr. Eddie stops by. He talks to Pete warningly about Alice and how he would shoot anyone he caught with her. And then we get what I wrote down as a very Carnival of Souls transition. I think there might even be like organ music playing. And he kind of turns blurry and it transitions into him at home answering the phone. And it's Alice on the other line arranging a rendezvous. And, you know, maybe that also has to do with Mr. Eddie threatening him and it's just like a fear response. Who knows?
Right.
But he did switch bodies with a person. So who knows what's going on? Okay, so Alice is worried that Mr. Eddie is going to kill them. She doesn't know what to do. She wants to rob a guy and run away with Pete. And he seems jealous, which suddenly we're getting Fred vibes from this jealousy. And then she tells the story about meeting a guy at Monk's who told her about a job, which we heard before from Renee. But that's all we heard originally. I think that's exactly what we heard before. But then we kind of see it like a flashback of it. And I presume she's telling him about the rest of it. But oh, no, there is a voiceover. So she is telling. She showed up and had to wait for a really long time and was getting very nervous. And then she was brought into another room, had a gun pulled on her. We find out that it's Laurent. Mr. Eddie's other name is Laurent. Mm-hmm. Although we have already heard that before, but like people start calling him that now.
Yeah.
He was just sitting there like watching her and I guess she's forced to strip and,
yes.
But I put a spell on you please. And she kind of starts seducing in her own way with her stripping.
Mm-hmm. And she has red hair at this point, right?
I think it's in black and white, but I thought it was. Wasn't it in black and white?
Think so. Because I remember... No.
Was it red?
Because I know she at some point has red hair.
She has pink hair in one kind of weird fantasy scene.
Yeah. She changes her hair color
maybe
a lot.
Maybe she has red hair. I don't know. But I think she had blonde hair.
I'm trying to remember. Because I can like... It's like one of those things, and maybe it speaks to the movie, where I'm like, I can remember it both in blonde and in red hair. but I
well,
have... Yeah.
Later on, when Fred comes back, we do see not this specific scene, but a scene of her and Laurent together, a couple scenes of her and Laurent together with the red hair or brown hair, whatever it is from the beginning. But I think this one is blonde because it's Alice telling her own story. So I think it's blonde just in this scene.
Okay. Yeah. And I think all the black and white scenes are all like the pornos. I think those are like kind of like,
I don't know why separate. I'm remembering it in black and white, but
well, I think like it was like a very like clean room. Like the room was not very detailed from what I can remember. And
now I'm remembering it in color. So I guess my brain just thought, oh, this would be cool in black and white. okay. So she basically kind of like takes as much control as she can of the situation. And Pete, listening to the story, is definitely giving more jealous Fred vibes.
Oh, Pete.
And she kind of like offers to go away, like, I'll just leave you alone. But he says that he loves her.
Sure.
And as soon as he says it, she kind of like is back in control of the situation. Because like his jealousy, she was like, no, I'll just leave. But then as soon as he says he loves her, she's like, okay, I've got control of the situation again.
Definitely. She wants to be in control.
Yeah, well, she already has an elaborate plan ready. So obviously this is not like a spur of the moment decision.
Right, right.
This was kind of probably her plan from the moment she started seducing Pete.
Yeah.
That's my presumption.
It was her way out, basically.
Yeah. Okay, so Sheila comes and yells at Pete on the lawn. She knows he's cheating. She says that he's different. And she runs away. And then we get a call on the phone at home, and it's Mr. Eddie, and he's being very menacing. He's asking a lot about Pete's well-being, and eventually he hands the phone over to the mysterious man for the party, and he says that they met at his house. So it's like he's talking to Fred.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, and then the mysterious man says, in the Far East, when a man is sentenced to execution, they are sent to a place where they can't escape, never knowing when an executioner will sneak up behind them and shoot them.
Okay.
So I feel like that is somehow important to this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Pete is upset, understandably, by this call. Oh, no, this is where his parents disappear. I guess I was wondering why I hadn't written it down before, but... his parents, who were standing there to give him the phone, suddenly disappear. So everything I said before, insert it now. So then we get Pete on the bus. This is all part of Alice's plan. He arrives at Andy's, and when he gets there, there's the porno, which has got Alice in it, playing, like on this huge TV. Which, honestly, I feel like Alice had to have set that up.
Yeah, or it could be just, like, one of those weird, like, houses where people come and go and there's just always something on. Well, I mean, I just
feel like she was like, hey, Andy, why don't you play that porno?
Oh, it could also be, like, you know, this is noise.
It just feels like more of a her idea than a his idea, but I don't really know much about him, so.
And we won't.
No, he won't. Okay, so Pete, when he gets there, hides behind the bar. And when Andy comes in, he thwacks him in the head, I think with the bottle. Alice comes down. She seems in no way, I think, is she naked? No.
I don't think she's so. She's
naked. But she's in no way scared. She's in no way ashamed that her porno is playing. Andy stands up. Oh, so they're talking. Andy stands up and proceeds to, what it seems to me, jump headfirst into the corner of a table.
Yeah, it was, I want to say it was probably like some, you know, interesting stunt work, but it looks like he tried to like jump on Pete and Pete like rolled him off. And then he went forehead first into the edge of a table, which is, yeah. One of the stranger deaths I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very gross.
There is a dispute between Pete and Alice as to who killed him.
Yeah. No one remembers.
Alice. Alice very coldly immediately goes in, starts stripping Andy's jewelry. She has no like reaction. Pete sees a photo of Laurent, Renee, Alice, and Andy. And he asks if both are her. And then he gets a headache. And his nose starts bleeding. And he goes upstairs and starts walking down this very trippy hallway with numbered doors.
Mm-hmm.
And he opens, I think, 25. And she is there, or Alice, or whatever. She's got pink hair in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And she's making fun of him. I think she might be having sex with someone. I'm not really sure. Then he enters the next room, which I think is 26, and enters back into like a reality.
Yes.
So I don't know if it's the headache causing like a hallucination type thing, or if it's like worlds bleeding over or whatever. But when he was walking down the hallway, it didn't really feel like reality until he re-entered room 26.
Yeah. I definitely like the Alice and Renee together in a picture was very jarring. Like, it didn't click in his brain, and he definitely went somewhere else. And then, I don't know, something in room 26 brought, like, maybe it was like the emptiness of it brought it back, brought him back to reality. He was like, oh.
Yeah. But that hallway is not in that house, because we see that hallway later. So,
no, it's definitely a hotel hallway.
Yeah. Okay. So, where am I? Oh, back downstairs, Alice is taking everything. Pete comes back down and she pulls a gun on him and is kind of threatening until she kind of jokingly hands it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she just seems very excited about the new life that they're going to soon have.
Yeah, she's just excited, I'm sure, because she's feeling free.
Exactly. They get into Andy's car and drive away. They are going to find a fence she knows in a cabin in the desert. And I don't even think that we see any driving, but or maybe we do, but it's the fire cabin from before, the reverse burning fire cabin.
Yes.
So they arrive, they leave their headlights on, but head inside. This very pointedly shows Pete leaving his gun in the car, which does not matter in any way. We don't.
Yeah.
That doesn't come back.
There's no payoff for that.
No. Alice is feeling very manipulative in this scene. They kind of make love on the sand by the light of the headlamps.
I was like, that seems like the worst place to do that, because there's just
everything about it seems terrible. You're like on the sand of the desert, which you know is got to be full of like cactus burrs and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
completely just illuminated by headlights.
Yeah, with like, and it's like very windy out, so there's like sand all in the air. Just the worst.
Yeah, not pleasant. So while this is happening, Pete is repeating to her that he wants her. And there's like some sort of Ride of the Valkyrie music playing. I don't know that it's Ride of the Valkyrie, but it's some sort of classical-ish music like that.
Yes.
And when they're done, she says, "You'll never have me." And then she walks naked back into the cabin. And Pete seems very frustrated.
Well.
And then when Pete stands up, he is Fred.
Da, da, da. What's going on?
And then I wrote, the mysterious man is in two places. So I'm not really sure. Yes. I can't remember exactly what happens right there.
He was, I'm trying to remember. It was something like he was either right by Fred and he was like, actually, I'm over there. And then Fred looks at the cabin. Oh, I think he was in the car and he's like, actually, I'm at the cabin or whatever.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Fred
looks
at the cabin and he's there and he looks back at the car and there's no one in the car.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So Fred puts his clothes on and goes into the cabin. And when he gets there, it's just the mysterious man and a plastic covered couch.
Yes.
The mysterious man has a video camera.
Yuck.
And he says, Alice is not her name. It's Renee. And then he asks his name. I don't know if, does Fred ask his name or does the mysterious man ask Fred his name? I think the mysterious man asks Fred.
Yeah,
his name.
I think so.
And then Fred runs and drives away. Another very clue-ish type of a scene. Okay. I mean, just, you know, with the whole Alice is not her name, it's Renee. And he's like, what's your name? And
What's your real name?
Okay, so then we go to the Lost Highway Hotel. And this is the place from Pete's trippy scene at Annie's.
Yes.
And we see that, you know, maybe I said the numbers wrong in the last scene, but we see that Renee is in room 26 having sex with Laurent. This is definitely Renee because she's got brown hair.
Yes.
Or red hair, but I think.
It's darker.
Huh?
It's definitely darker.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely the dark color. It's the Renee hair. But Fred goes into door 25, which I think in the hallway scene, it was actually 25 that was the one that was quiet. And 26 was the one that she was in, I think. Because I think it was the same rooms. Anyway. Okay, so we see Renee after having sex with Laurent, leaving him asleep. This has a very like prostitute transactional feel to it to
me. Yeah, because
it just kind of feels like they met. She doesn't take any money with her, but you know, she doesn't like try to steal his stuff.
Yeah, it's like, and even like the sex itself was like, it wasn't passionate. It felt very business.
Yeah, Laurent does not seem like an evil villain in these motel scenes to me. Mm-hmm. He just kind of seems like an old, like, you know, like just a like guy. A regular guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I keep losing my place. Okay. Fred watches her leave through the window. Then he grabs the gun and knocks on Laurent's door.
Yes.
And he grabs Laurent. He throws him in the trunk. And the mysterious man is in a different room watching through another window. So he drives out to the desert. And when he opens the trunk, Laurent comes out fighting. And it kind of looks like he may win the fight when a knife is placed in Fred's hand by a mystery hand. And Fred cuts Laurent's throat. And seems like the mystery hand was from the mystery man.
Yes. Aptly named.
Yeah. Okay. So Laurent doesn't die immediately. He's just kind of like laying on the sand. And the mysterious man hands him a tiny TV screen with an antenna. And pornography plays, presumably the Alice porno, I'm guessing.
I think so.
But Renee isn't it, not Alice. Okay, and then suddenly we're watching this viewing party of this porno, and Laurent and Renee, there's a lot of people there, but Laurent and Renee are making out.
Mm-hmm.
They seem kind of turned on by this whole event, but there's a lot of people there, so, you know. I presume that they are the, like, this is Laurent's house or whatever. And
yeah, probably like quote-unquote premiere parties and
exactly
that kind of thing.
Andy is one of them. In the video, Marilyn Manson is stabbed or something. It's kind of unclear.
Yeah, it was interesting, I guess.
Then Fred and the man, I assume the mysterious man, are standing there on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Then the mysterious man shoots Laurent in the head and whispers in Fred's ear.
Yes.
And then we see, very, and then the man, huh?
Was it, oh, that was that very Twin Peaks, Black Lodge.
Yes. Yes. Well, the mysterious man is very Black Lodge to me.
Yeah.
He's definitely part of what makes it so hard to figure out exactly what's happening. Okay, so now the man is gone. Just mysteriously came, mysteriously left. And Fred has the gun. Okay, so then we're back at Andy's. He's still dead. The cops are all there. The photo that we saw earlier no longer has Alice. It just has Renee.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops see it and they're like, hey, that's the lady who was murdered by the guy who disappeared.
Right.
And now Fred is driving Laurent's car and he goes to his own house. He rings the buzzer and he says, Dick Laurent is dead, into it. But the cops are there waiting for him. So he drives away and they chase him all through the day, presumably through the night. This is like OJ type of a situation, seems
yes.
like. They're chasing through the desert at night when Fred's head starts to shake and electricity sounds and there's light and he screams like someone getting electrocuted in the electric chair. Then the road returns and the credits roll.
What an ending.
And then I noticed in the credits that Eric DeRay, who played Leo, was a swing on the movie.
That's cool. Yeah.
His mom is Joanna Ray, the casting director lady who does everything.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
I don't think he really acted that much except for in Twin Peaks, because you know how David Lynch loves to pull someone out and be like, you're my star.
You're making sense to me visually, now act.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, so I wrote down a little something.
Okay.
Okay, this was what my thought when I first finished the movie.
Okay.
I guess I think that the second half was Fred remembering his biased version of events that led to him getting together with Renee and then killing her. And mm-hmm. I said, maybe he made a deal with the devil in order to kill Laurent. I need to think about this more. But then I said, maybe it was all a fantasy, because to be honest, the first third of the movie felt the least real.
Yeah.
And there definitely seems to be some Twin Peaks, like, Black Lodge shit going on. And then I wrote, but who is the dreamer?
it's definitely something where it's like, the more you talk about it, the more, like, ideas pop into your head and, like, kind of theories, and you start to analyze things differently. Because my theory about this is that, you know, we know that the central core of this movie is, like, how we remember things. And is mm-hmm. it correct? Is it ever correct? Because we always have, like, a personal bias and all that kind of stuff. And my interpretation of this movie was that Pete and Fred are the same people. Pete is the younger version of Fred. And uh-huh. obviously Alice is the younger version of Renee. And that they do escape, quote unquote, like, you know, I think probably things didn't happen exactly how they happened with Pete, but it's very similar. You know, they got together, they escaped, and they, you know, possibly had to change their names based on the things that they did.
Yes, yes.
But basically, I would guess that escape did not change Alice's / Renee's situation. She still is very controlled and not free, and so she's doing things on the side to try and probably make a way for herself to get out of Fred's control, and Fred finds out. And so I think a lot of the events of this movie, one thing I had a hard time trying to figure out was we see Fred kill Laurent, mm-hmm. but if Fred and Pete are kind of the same person, is Fred killing Laurent because that's who Renee is having the affair with, or did Pete kill Laurent back in the day to free Alice? And that's mm-hmm. what I can't figure out, because it would kind of make sense if he killed Laurent because Renee was having an affair, and then he kills Renee because obviously he found out, he's very controlling.
Yes.
So I think it's like
definitely considered that as one of the potential outcomes. Like I said, I had mm-hmm. a million theories as to what exactly is happening. Mm-hmm. Like, it does make sense that the whole Pete Alice storyline is kind of Fred imagining or remembering, you know, his own version of remembering how they got together in the first place. The only thing is, timeline wise it doesn't make sense because Andy was alive, but it mm-hmm. implies that they killed him long ago, if that is the case,
right?
And the Dick Laurent thing, which is why I kind of, but it does make sense with the, like, characterization of Alice as being like this, like, you know, she's a siren who mm-hmm. pulled him into this scheme. But it doesn't make sense to what we saw at the beginning of him being, like, very menacing over her and her being very meek, because the Alice we knew would never be like that.
Yeah.
Plus the whole saxophone thing, like, you don't go from being a mechanic to a musician, and he had already heard Fred's music, plus him being in the jail cell. I don't know. It doesn't really work as, like, a complete, like, this is definitely the answer, but it's definitely a good theory, because then at the end, you know, when he's having his fantasy, he's put to death, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I wonder also if when we're with Pete, I kind of take it as Fred is kind of reliving all mm-hmm. his moments from when he first met Alice up to now, / Renee. Basically, like, what led him on this path? And I feel like there are, like, little leaks of the, like,
what, well, the fact called, that like, he turns present into him at the end.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there are, like, little leaks of the present, like the saxophone music, and then the picture of Alice and Renee in the same picture. Mm-hmm. There are, like, little leaks because he's trying to remember, and it's always his version of events, and it's always going to be very biased towards him. And so I almost don't necessarily trust the Pete storyline to be exactly correct.
Oh, for sure.
And for, I feel like as for someone who's like, who Fred is, like, he's very controlling. He's probably very like misogynistic and awful towards Renee. And he probably is remembering it and is blaming her for getting him into the situation where he killed her. Agreed. So he's probably like, of course she seduced me and she got me to do all these bad things. And it's like, no, you made those decisions yourself.
Yes. Yes. Totally agree. My only question is, because I was thinking, are the only real parts of this movie the videotape scenes that we see, you know, of him actually killing her, of, you know, is that like the only real thing, except for, I guess, maybe some of the, like, the fact that he's in jail and goes to the electric chair? Because the first part doesn't really seem that real either. But there's just so little context in the first part, you know? There's, like, very little outside.
I feel like what we're being given is the story from Fred's perspective. And we're not going to have all of the details because it's only going to be the stuff, A, he remembers, if it's even remembered correctly at all. And B, it's going to be all from his point of view. And so I feel like there are parts of the story that I'm just going to be like, this is what Fred is perceiving to be true. Maybe it doesn't explain things because he probably doesn't have all the pieces, because we're not getting the story from Renee. We're not getting the story from Laurent. So I wonder if it's just like, this is a tale of memory through one person and how biased it could be and how untrustworthy it could be to be told story just from one perspective.
Totally. But then I had some other theories too.
Let's hear them.
Well, I just like a little bit of a theory about the mysterious man and how he got to kill Dick Laurent. Did he like make a deal with the devil? And like, was the killing of his wife part of the deal? Like, like, sure, you can kill Dick Laurent, but you're not going to have complete control over your actions. And
right. You got to give and take.
Yeah. Which I think makes sense to me in a way. But
then
also there's the whole Carnival of Souls theory, which maybe he's dead the whole time. Maybe.
Well, yeah.
The first thing that happens is the last thing that happens. And this is all like kind of a dream world he's in.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I could see both sides of like the supernatural. Like it is, the supernatural element is present and like making a deal with the devil for, you know, kind of some sort of to get out of some sort of situation, but there's payment. But I also see the other side where it's like, the mysterious man is maybe sort of a more symbolic figure, like symbolic of the evil within Fred and Pete, and that he's present when he seems to only be present when things are going bad, like when things start to fall apart.
I just had another thought. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Not related to what you were saying, but what if the last scene at the hotel where Renee is with Laurent? And he's watching. What if, okay, that is like real. And that's when he killed Dick. And that is what started his whole spiraling out of control with Renee that led to her death. And then the second half with Pete is, you know, some sort of weird jailhouse dream type thing. But like the death of Laurent could have happened prior to the movie starting. Well, I mean, obviously it would have if... But like, you know, the movie has a very cyclical nature with it starting with what happens at the very end. But because that, you know, that Laurent and her seemed very mutual and she wasn't like being kept against her will. She left, but it was also like in a hotel. So, you know, it was like out of the way. And considering the way Dick Laurent is built up to be this crazy bad guy, which we know probably isn't true.
Right.
But, and he seems so normal in that one scene. I mean, you know, he didn't seem like a crazy bad guy. Maybe somehow Pete or Fred saw or, you know, was there and witnessed that or, you know, was jealous and followed her around.
Mm.
But then I don't know if she would have known. Maybe she knew Laurent prior,
mm-hmm.
you know, back when they were young. But I don't think they really ran away because she was trying to get out of like an abusive relationship type of thing. I don't think any of that was true necessarily.
Yeah, it's that's
if that's the if the Laurent thing that I'm saying is the case.
Yeah, I do really like the idea that all of these like scenes of Laurent as like this like gangster villain, like pure evil, I feel like that is all so exaggerated that it's meant for us to be like, this can't be real, is it? Like, yeah. The whole, like, the striptease, not striptease, but, like, the stripping at gunpoint kind of deal, and then, like, all the porno stuff. Like, I feel like there's just so much of the porno stuff that maybe that is a part of her past, that she was, like, a porn actress.
Maybe.
Or of some sort, a sex worker of some sort, clearly, because she seems to be also, like, having these transactions. And right. I almost wonder if Fred is remembering Laurent as this like crazy villain because he has to like justify it to himself to be like,
right,
look what I saved her from.
Right.
Look how evil he was. I mean, you know, whatever I do can pale in comparison to what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And to maybe try and justify to himself, like, you're not a bad person for killing her. Like, look where she came from.
Right. But whenever we see the reality of Renee and Laurent together, like her mm-hmm. with the brown hair, they seem like they have a perfectly
amiable,
yeah,
yeah,
mutual type relationship. I mean, maybe he was like the porn director. And
yeah, I also just had a thought. I'm thinking of Andy, and I'm wondering if him being killed with like Pete and Alice is actually him being killed by Fred. Because we see the police investigating Andy's murder. Yeah. So
like a string of murders. Like, Laurent gets killed first, then he kills Renee, and then he goes and kills Andy.
Yeah. I think all of those murders were by Fred. Because mm-hmm. maybe they were all, whether Laurent was involved or not, Andy was definitely involved in some sort of, like, porn industry. Maybe he worked with Renee or managed her or something, and there's something about maybe Fred not approving in a way of that like lifestyle or that career choice or something, and maybe there's some sort of shame involved in it, but clearly we know from his flashbacks to when if he is Pete and the way he treated his own girlfriend, I mean, clearly he's not known for treating women well. So I think all those murders happened. I think he's misremembering people and events to kind of justify to himself why
because
should have committed them.
Yeah, because the first part, I guess what makes it seem a little unreal is that there's a lot of like gaps. It seems like we'll just leave a situation. Yeah. Suddenly we're in a different place and there's no like transition between the two. It's just like, oh, I guess we just skipped a bunch.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of he killed Laurent, and that's where we open, like, maybe right after he killed Laurent. And that's why he hears them say, Dick Laurent is dead, or hears himself say it. And that then they go to that party with Andy, and that mm-hmm. makes him jealous. So he kills Renee, which sends him to go kill Andy. And then maybe he's kind of on the run from the police and has a chase. And then we get to the scene in the jail, and he just has like a embolism or something that causes him to hallucinate. He's remembering the way he wants it to have been. And yeah, in full circle, right after he commits his first murder, we pull the switch.
Yeah. And yeah, I like the idea that, you know, I think at the core of it, it's really about remembering things and how bias can play a role into what's being presented and kind of the perception you can have on a string of events, mm-hmm. and whether you trust them or not. But there's also like another theory in my mind where it's like, the beginning of, it's almost like he's having his life flash before his eyes right before they pull the switch. And the like, that's his entire, what he's flashing back through and kind of going through. And that's why it's kind of crazy looking and we don't know what to believe. And then the end, obviously, when you hear the electricity is when they, you know, pull a switch and that's the end of him.
Oh, yeah.
So
I kind of think like,
it's interesting.
The whole, almost maybe his entire stay in jail until he gets executed is him basically reliving, reimagining, retelling his own story to himself.
Yeah.
And that is probably why he's having such crazy brain problems, is because he's trying to lie to himself so hardcore and remember a different version of events, which kind of splits him into two people in a way. And the mysterious man, who is, to me, kind of a between the worlds kind of figure, maybe even like the devil on your shoulder type of a thing.
Uh-huh.
He also gets split into two, but he's still the same devil regardless.
Right.
But Renee gets split into two. I don't know why he calls her Alice, because I don't think that they actually had to change their names. I don't know why his name was different or her name, but I mean, maybe, but it just seems like, it's just to fool us, probably the audience.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I like to talk about this type of movie. I think it's like a good conversation haver, like, to like kind of dole out, like, what does this represent? Especially because we're not being told exactly anything. Yeah, so
for sure.
It's all up to perception and also how you remember the movie.
Yeah, 100%. It has to do with that. I mean, there were definitely moments, even on the recapping after writing things down, that I was like, I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly.
Right.
But I feel like this time we've gotten closer than I've ever, even though the second time I watched it, I felt like I knew what happened. But having rewatched it since then, I think we're definitely on the right track, if not hitting the nail on the head. And at least one of our theories.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, with theorizing, I don't think there's, especially with like David Lynch stuff, I don't think there's any sort of like merit to being correct. Like, I don't think you can be correct. And I think having differing theories or somewhat complementary but not the same, I think it's all like, it's all valid for the movie. And that's like the purpose of the movie, is to get you thinking.
Well, and honestly, I don't think David Lynch has a truth to it. I think a lot of what he does is based on like subconscious and, you know, meditation and just pulling imagery that feels correct, as opposed to intellectually fits, you know, into a prescribed thing. So
and a lot of things contain multitudes. They can all be right at once.
At least two of everything.
Exactly. But I like our theories.
I do too. Think they're good. I'm proud of us, and I don't think we actually need a whole other episode just to talk about theories. We did a pretty
good
job.
Ended up working out. Yeah.
But did you have a favorite part?
Oh gosh, I kind of, I don't know. I really liked the scenes where they're looking at the VHS tapes, because it feels so like, it's this feeling that's like a very specific type of like movie, like I would call it like voyeur horror, when you're like, some, like, I'm being watched and I'm having it presented to me that I'm being watched. It's something that is like so like skin crawling grossness to me, like in a such a weirdly like I like to be scared kind of way. And I like the way they did it, where they kind of broke it up into parts and were like, no it's progressing. Yes. And then those scenes always get me thinking, like, is that meant to symbolize like Fred's stalking of Renee and being like, I'm finding out more and more about your, whether it's infidelities or lies or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So
I wouldn't be surprised if Fred was videotaping the house to try to catch her doing something. But at the end, the last video we see from above feels more like a security camera, like he's got his security system on and he filmed himself murdering his wife, you know, not intentionally, but
what about you?
I like the last section of the movie after we're past Pete and Alice, because honestly, Pete is not my favorite.
Me neither. And he's kind of boring.
Alice is good, but I don't. Everything just feels so unreal about the whole section.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it when Fred comes back and seems in charge, and we go to the Lost Highway Hotel, and the talking into the intercom and the police chase. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's a really cool ending, and
yeah,
it really kind of, I don't know, I just really like that part.
Yeah, I like the idea of like time being like the whole flat circle, everything's happening all at once. Like, I feel like that's like it's reinforced in this movie with like the Dick Laurent is dead stuff and the mysterious man being everywhere and nowhere at the same time. So I think that definitely plays a part into it.
Yeah. I like this movie because there's just so much to think about it, you know? It's, and every time you watch it, it can feel different, especially if you take a big long break in between.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you have time to like mull over your thoughts and be like, okay, now that I've had more time, 10 more theories have popped into my head that I need to see if they work or not.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a movie that works well with its central premise, you know, like...
Yes.
How do we remember things? How do we interpret things? Art, does the situation at the time matter?
Yes, yeah. I don't know. This movie, and this is probably, I guess, we can go right into our final thoughts about it.
Yeah.
I feel like the more I watch David Lynch stuff, the more I kind of, I'm trying to like figure out how to word it. Like, I feel like all of David Lynch's female characters are always, they're always very interesting to me. And they're always like multifaceted, like, you know, these women that are, they have like different stories, and I'm interested in these women to see like, where's their story going? But I feel like for a lot of, can you hear me?
Yeah, you were breaking up for a while, so I missed some of what you were saying, but I was like, I'll get it when he comes back. I'll figure it out.
Sorry. I'll start over.
Okay.
Basically, what I've sort of learned from doing a lot of David Lynch projects, recapping them, is like, I'm kind of always more interested in his female characters. I find their stories to be more interesting, and I'm more interested to see like what choices are they going to make and where are they going to go and where have they been? And I find a lot of the times, like, I don't really care about his male characters, and I find them to be a little boring and kind of like, why are they there in a way other than to like, I guess, be violent.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's necessarily purposeful.
Unless they're Kyle MacLachlan.
Well, you know, he's like the one, like one of the only like male characters that I'm like, I love, you know, of David Lynch's. But I think like, especially with this movie, like I don't care about Fred and I don't care about Pete. I only kind of care about Renee/Alice. Like her story was so interesting. We got to see like where she comes from, and I don't know. I find that this movie is kind of confirming those thoughts for me.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, I believe I've heard David Lynch say that he prefers the company of women. And
me too.
It seems like most of his movies are kind of, you know, sometimes they'll be like Kyle MacLachlan, like Blue Velvet character, but even they are kind of questionable sometimes.
Yeah,
but it's always like, why are men evil? How do they become evil? Look at these evil men. But the women, even if they're doing bad things, they're just like complex and tortured and, you know, strong. But it's more about the men's weaknesses and the women's strengths, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, which is, and maybe like strength through like perseverance or something like that, which, you know, you could argue, like, you know, whether that's good or bad. And I, you know, I feel like I've, especially on this podcast, have talked about both sides of that argument. But yeah, I just, you know, like the more David Lynch stuff I watch, the more like, I'm like, is it a reflection of society that like, you know, men get to be evil and boring and they still get to be the main character. And, and women are considered the side characters, but you just want to learn so much more about them. And it's very interesting. And, you know, I feel like this movie definitely like gets me thinking about it more. So I think it's a really good one. It's different. It's different.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch Mulholland Drive sometime in the near future, but not immediately. We'll let this one sit for a little while. But
yeah,
it does feel very much like a companion piece. And I haven't ever even watched Inland Empire, but I feel like it might kind of be in the same. I have no idea. I don't know same what vein. Inland Empire is about, but I do feel like they're kind of considered his California trilogy, or LA trilogy. You know, loosely. Okay, but my final thoughts, let's see. I feel like I've said them all. This movie is great. It's hard to understand, but it doesn't make it unenjoyable. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you watched it, we're like, I have no idea what happened, but I still liked it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Great conversations. Very 90s, very...
So 90s.
Takes me back to a time in my life for sure. My first real David Lynch movie. I was wondering the other day, was I lying? Did I watch Blue Velvet first? But no, I'm pretty sure it was Lost Highway because it was coming. I think it came out around the time that I was, you know, in college renting movies. Yeah.
it definitely seems like a movie that's like... Like, you know, people, especially back then when there wasn't like, you know, you could just go on the Criterion app and look at what people consider like cool movies and thought provoking. Right. Like, I'm sure in all the circles, it was like, oh, Lost Highway is so cool. And yeah. So as a college kid, you're like, oh, I gotta watch it. Hello.
Yeah. And I mean, we were all obsessed with Twin Peaks at the time. I had turned everyone into an obsessive fan of Twin Peaks. So yeah. Yeah, and I'm excited to watch it again someday and be like, oh, mm-hmm. What were my theories before?
I know. Who knows? Maybe 10 years from now, we'll do a random check-in episode and be like, Lost Highway theory updates.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll be able to. Maybe we'll try to like talk to the guys from Twin Peaks Unwrapped, Ben and Brian, about it. But I would also like to try to do a Ronnie Rocket episode because I also did the Unseen Players for that one, and because it was like, you know, it never got made at all. It was just kind of like a loose script, I think. But there are definitely themes in that one that kind of relate to this. But you know, David Lynch pretty much always has themes that relate to each other. Oh, and there's one more little thing that I didn't mention last time. Probably not the thing to end on, but when he's in the cell and the curtains open onto his memory or whatever, I was thinking that is so Eraserhead, woman in the
it is radiator. That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Oh my gosh,
I forgot to mention it, or I didn't even think about it really until after we'd already recorded the episode. And I know we talked about sorting Alice and Pete, but now that we've kind of concluded that they're the same people and that they're not even real versions of the same people, I say maybe we can do them on a check-in if we feel like it, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, because like, you know, we've already said like we kind of don't prefer Pete anyway, so
yeah. Sorry about the spaghetti.
I think it's a good idea.
All right, well, I guess that's it for today. I don't know what we're doing next because I haven't even looked at our list, but next week for sure. Yes.
Something good, I assure you.
We'll talk about it once we get off this podcast.
Exactly. But yeah, I would really love to hear your theories about Lost Highway.
Yes.
Kind of and what your thoughts are.
First watching, your second watching, did your theories change? I would love to hear that. Please write it.
So if you would like to send us your theories, you can email us at mannersandmadness@gmail.com. You can DM us on Twitter @mannersmadness or on Instagram or Threads @mannersandmadnesspod. Or you can leave a 1-minute voicemail on our website at mannersandmadness.com.
Yes. And we would love a rating, a review. It really does a lot to help get the podcast in front of more eyes.
Yes. And yeah, I think that's it for this week. So I guess we'll see you guys next week with whatever we come up with.
All right.
All right. Good night. See you then. Bye.